And welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District's Talking Newspaper. Liz and Gordon Legg have edited the extracts this week. And so we'll begin with our usual regular notices. The first is to say is if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please check the boxes plugged into the mains before you telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. That's 01962 711 998. As you listen to the recording, remember that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And one more note for those of you with computers or tablets. As well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, which is www.winchestertalkingnews.com. That's www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, most recent first on the list. And now, let's take a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle. Our readers today are Claire Porter.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
And Peter Walker.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Barbara Kearns, standing in for Ros Lydiard again. Now, moving on to the news. Here are the headlines. Threat to free parking. Council chiefs set out visions. And Hampshire speeding incidents top 70,000. And the first headline story from Claire, please.
Threat to free parking. Major changes to car parking in Winchester could be implemented as council bosses attempt to address a multi-million pound financial shortfall over the next few years. Evening and Sunday city centre car park charges, scrapped discounts and park and ride fee increases are just some of the options being explored to help the city council bridge the gap. Civic chiefs are being forced to take significant decisions as current forecasts predict a budget shortfall of £3.4 million in 2023-24. This is despite already creating schemes to save more than £1.6 million next year and increasing these savings to deliver more than £3 million for the local authority by the end of the 3 years that follow. Officers are in the middle of a comprehensive review of car parking and some of the emerging policies could deliver a major shake-up of the service. Six car parking-related options identified in a report to Cabinet, which met on October 23rd, could yield an additional £1.23 million a year. At present, Winchester is one of the few Hampshire cities or towns to offer free evening parking. Mark Mills Goodlett, chairman of the Winchester Business Strategy Group and Hampshire Chamber of Trade director, warned the proposed parking measures outlined in the budget options report could have a negative impact for city centre business, particularly introducing evening and Sunday charges. Honestly, I think it will have a detrimental effect on the businesses in the High Street, said Mr. Mills Goodlett. It is okay to use park and ride if you're going for a small shop, but if you want something substantial, you can't take it back on the bus. Mr. Miles Goodlett added, I travel from Hedge End to come to Winchester in the evenings a lot. There are traders in Winchester that depend on evening trade, and this would have a big impact on that. If they start charging in the evening, people might just as well go to Southampton. A report to Cabinet by Councillor Neil Cutler, portfolio holder for finance and risk, says, the financial challenge is at a level which cannot be met by operational changes alone. Along with other local authorities, the Council is anticipating a significant financial challenge over the medium-term financial planning period to 2023-24, says Councillor Cutler's report. A series of wide-ranging budget options have been outlined to Cabinet, with all of these deemed to have a large impact on service delivery or how the Council charges for services. These actions include parking charges to increase some rates by 3% in Winchester, introduce £2 flat charges on Sundays and evenings in central car parks, increase park and ride daily charges by 50p, remove concessions for Cattle Market and Worthy Lane car parks, and increase Market Town parking charges by 10%. £1.23 million. Introduce chargeable garden waste service, £500,000. Increase council tax by 3% rather than 2%, £292,000. Reduce toilet provision in the city, £50,000. End 24-hour active monitoring of CCTV, £150,000. All-out elections every 4 years, £100,000. Review community transport shop mobility, £100,000. Develop a fee to discharge employment and skills plan costs, £100,000. Advertising boardings at key locations such as Friarsgate car park, bus station, £25,000. Further review of grants programme, £50,000.
Council chiefs set out visions. Residents and business in Winchester are set to be asked to give their views on the City Council's 5-point priority list for the coming years, only 9 months after the policies were last refreshed. The key areas highlighted in the Draft Council Plan 2020-25 are climate change, housing, economy, healthy lifestyles and delivery of important public services. As the Chronicle went to print, members of the Winchester Council's Cabinet were assessing the high-level document which sets out what the local authority wants to achieve, as well as informing other strategies. Following approval of the documentation by council leaders at the meeting on Wednesday, a 5-week consultation will be launched for stakeholders and the community to have their say up until November the 29th. At present, the council is listing its priorities for 2020 to 2025 under the following headings: tackling the climate emergency and creating a greener district, homes for all, a vibrant local economy, living well, and your services, your voice. A report from council leader Councillor Lucille Thompson to Cabinet said, the current council plan 2017 to 20 was adopted by the council on January the 16th, 2019, and runs until March the 31st, 2020. There have been some significant changes at the council since this time, including a change in administration following the local elections in May and the declaration of a climate emergency in June. The council plan 2020-25 sets out the council's key ambitions for the coming 5 years and focuses on five priority outcomes. It adds, the council could choose not to have a council plan or not refresh the current strategy. It is the council plan that sets out the key delivery programme for the council and enables effective business planning and programme management for teams. Not to have a plan is not recommended. A six-page consultation document outlines the challenges the council faces, what it wants to achieve and how it plans to do it. The draft council plan is due to be considered by scrutiny committee at a meeting on November the 27th as part of the consultation before a final version goes back to Cabinet the following month for approval and recommendation to full council.
Can we just stop us?
Hampshire speeding incidents top 70,000. Police recorded more than 70,000 incidents of speeding across Hampshire last year, including one driver caught doing almost 140 miles an hour. Figures revealed through a Freedom of Information request show that Hampshire Police detected 73,220 incidents. They also reveal that the highest recorded speed in Hampshire last year was 137 miles per hour on the M3, though police were unable to say when this took place. Road safety experts have described the highest speed figure as frightening. But they have also raised concern about other figures within the FOI request. The figures show the police detected just 1,400 incidents of drivers using their mobile phones at the wheel. RAC Road Safety spokesperson Simon Williams said, "While it's frightening to see that someone drove as fast as 137 miles per hour, it is also very worrying that only 1,400 drivers were caught for driving using a handheld mobile phone. The dramatic reduction in the number of roads police officers since 2010 is almost certainly to blame. As a result, many drivers believe there is little chance of being caught for anything other than speeding. Nationally, figures show a sharp reduction in the number of fixed penalty notices handed out for using phones at the wheel. In 2011, there were 120,000 drivers fined for the offence. By 2017, it had dropped to just 22,800. Earlier this year, Hampshire Constabulary and Thames Valley Police launched a new campaign in which officers were deployed on double-decker buses in an attempt to catch drivers using their mobile phones at the wheel. In April, the two forces also announced they would be among the first in the country to use new technology which can detect when drivers are using their phones without a hands-free device. The two campaigns follow a number of incidents, nationally and locally, of serious or fatal crashes involving drivers using mobile phones. Keith Mees, then 49, was driving an HGV on the M271 in December 2015 using a mobile phone when he caused a crash, killing Marion Altianu and Ian Callin, 42.
Thank you. And now we'll read the death notices and then Claire will follow with Christian comment. The Hampshire Chronicle family announcements. Archer, Frederick Joseph, passed away peacefully on the 7th of October 2019 at Royal Hampshire County Hospital after a short illness, aged 93 years. Benham, Doris Rita, known as Dot, passed away peacefully in Royal Hampshire County Hospital, Winchester, on Wednesday the 16th of October 2019, aged 88 years. Fluke, Stephen, known as Steve, on the 10th of October 2019, peacefully in Winchester Hospital, aged 87. Gumbrell, Eileen, passed away peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 8th of October 2019, aged 90. Jones, May. Passed away peacefully in Winchester Hospital on the 20th of October 2019, aged 86 years. Laws, Rita Ann. On the 10th of October 2019, aged 74, passed away after a brave battle with cancer, surrounded by family. Marchant, Wesley Dennis, died 10th of October at Flowerdown Nursing Home, aged 71 years. Matthews, Frank Victor, known as Jim, died peacefully on the 12th of October 2019 at the New Forest Nursing Home, Fritham, aged 82. Sharrock, née Tubb, Diana, formerly of Sparsholt, died on the 17th of October 2019 in Lancaster Infirmary, aged 81.
Christian Comment is written this week by Rosemary A. Baker, and she's headed it In Praise of St. Luke. Last Sunday evening, I preached in the evening at St. James Road Methodist Church in Southampton. This was to be their third service of the day, so I was a little anxious about choosing my theme, knowing the morning service would be based on the set lessons for the day. As it would be 2 days after St. Luke's Day, and having a soft spot for him as a fellow doctor, I thought this would make a good subject. We were also coming to an end of the church year, focusing on Luke's Gospel, as it was due to be Matthew again from Advent Sunday, 1st December. So it would round him off, as it were. I was pleased then to discover that the morning service on Radio 4 last week had chosen saints as its theme, following on from the canonisation of John Henry Newman on the previous Sunday. So, on Friday the 18th, St. Luke's Day, having walked the dogs in good time, I sat back to listen for some tips on St. Luke, only to find they had chosen St. Francis instead for that day. So I was left to do my own research and revision. So what have I discovered about Luke? He is said to have died a martyr, which automatically makes him a saint. He is a doctor, a missionary traveller and evangelist, a close and loyal friend of Paul. He is believed to have been a Greek, and as such was a Gentile, i.e. not Jewish. He wrote the Gospel, which bears his name, and also the Acts of the Apostles, thus contributing more to the New Testament than anyone else, even Paul. It would seem that not only was he the only non-Jew to write in the New Testament, but in the Old Testament as well, as this is taken from Jewish writings. Luke's Gospel contains parables that none of the other three have, notably the prodigal son and the Good Samaritan. Also, the stories of Christ's birth and childhood are only in Luke. He is believed to have written principally for Gentiles and really majors on Jesus spending time with and telling parables about the poor and marginalised of society. He also has more references to women than the other gospel writers. Luke also writes particularly about the activity of the Holy Spirit, being active at the birth of Jesus and John the Baptist, as well as at Christ's baptism. We are told of the effects of the day of Pentecost, when a large crowd came to believe, and on numerous individuals in Acts. This second volume tells about the birth of the early church, and as a result of the actions of the Holy Spirit, it spread throughout the world. And that was written by Rosemary A. Baker.
Thank you, Claire. There are a lot of letters to the editor this week, covering a wide range of subjects. So, Richard, will you kick us off, please?
Yes, willingly. This from Sue Wood, who describes it as undemocratic. Sir, in her recent letter to the Chronicle, People's Vote, the prospective Lib Dem parliamentary candidate Paula Ferguson sets out the Liberal Democrat policy to revoke Article 50. In such a short time as a city councillor and now standing as a prospective parliamentary candidate, one can only assume that she speaks with naivety. Miss Ferguson says, dispel any confusion, and then sets out her reasons. Does she assume that the electorate have no common sense and have not been reading and watching MPs of all parties trying not to carry out the wishes of the electorate? The referendum outcome was promised to be honoured by most political parties in the 2017 general election. The Liberal Democrats acknowledged the result of the referendum and then proceeded to ignore it. How arrogant of them now to say that they would, if they won an election, have a mandate to revoke Article 50. The referendum of 2016 achieved the highest turnout of voters in a lifetime. How many people's votes would it take? 3, 5, 7 to reach an agreed outcome to suit the Liberal Democrat Party? It's also not gone unnoticed that their party leader's family may benefit significantly from Article 50 being revoked. Do they really believe they are Democrats, or is the title just a wheeze to confuse? Better a bit of honesty and call themselves the Liberal Undemocratic Party. Sue Wood, Locks Lane, Sparshot.
On a similar subject, this one entitled Hearsay. Sir, grateful as I am to Caroline Peters, Chronicle Letters, October 10th, for a CV for Paula Ferguson, it is, for the moment, hearsay. Neither Paula nor the Lib Dem Party have published such a CV. My search for a Paula Ferguson, registered as a psychologist with the Health and Care Professions Council, draws a blank, and nothing is mentioned in her WCC Register of Interests. Paula writes in support of remaining in the EU, but produces no reasoning. Has she read the Lisbon Treaty, or researched it properly, or is she reliant on armchair hearsay? Things would be very different if EU governance were properly democratic, but it is not, and the treaty is an abdication of parliamentary authority. Her hopes for a Lib Dem government do not add up. At best, a Labour-SNP Lib Dem coalition is possible. What might happen then? It is far easier for Scotland to secede if Britain remains in the EU, and that is likely to be the SNP condition for the coalition. Paradoxically, with Scotland gone, the Leave arithmetic becomes stronger. Where are the Lib Dems heading? As a lesser issue, Paula has opposed the station approach office's proposal, while her husband commutes to offices in Farnborough, rented by the software company of which he is a director. Being a nice person and having the nous to run the country are different things entirely. This from James Anderson of South Wanston.
Why no refurb? A new leisure centre is to be built at Bar End. This, of course, is a good cause, as sports are good for us. Kim Gottlieb in the Chronicle, April the 11th, stated of this, the business plan shows a construction cost of £43 million and interest charge of £27 million and £12 million for future maintenance. That is £82 million. Why was there not a good refurbishment of River Park, which I estimate at half the cost of the new leisure centre, which would leave £41 million left for social housing? So we are to spend £100 million or more on a destructive road scheme, the widening of the M3 Junction 9, which will generate more. £82 million will be spent on a leisure centre, when the existing one could be refurbished. And all this time, the most pressing need in Winchester is affordable or social housing, and that's ignored. The two schemes, if carried out, costing £182 million, reveal how lacking in priorities we are. Who want a road widened when we are using our cars too much? And many lorry journeys are unnecessary. A bigger leisure centre when we have one already, and, ignoring a necessity for many local people, affordable social housing which does not consume all their earnings in high rents. Robert Pitt, St Cross Road, Winchester.
Vote hijacked, thinks Lydia McKinnon. Karen McCleary, Indefensible, Chronicle Letters October 10, quotes Paddy Ashdown speaking shortly before the 2016 referendum about the inviolate sovereign voice of the British people. But she omits what he said months afterwards as the reality became more evident. The UK voted for Brexit, but not this Brexit. Their vote's been hijacked by the extreme Brexiteers to support their own prejudices. This is not respecting the vote, it's abusing the vote for extremist nonsense which damages the UK. Not this Brexit. That's very apposite right now at the time of writing, since we appear to be heading for a no-deal Brexit. No deal was never proposed during the 2016 referendum campaign. Instead, we were told that we didn't need a plan because we were going to get a deal. The best deal ever. The easiest deal in history. Even arch-Brexiteer Daniel Hannan himself said at the time there was zero chance we'll be leaving the single market. Had appeared upset when it became apparent we would be leaving it after all. Yeah, it's indefensible that the Brexiteers are now claiming that the British people voted for disaster capitalism, shorting the pound, tax evasion for the richest, removal of workers' rights and watering down of environmental regulations. As Paddy Ashdown said, this is not respecting the vote, it's abusing it. Lydia McKinnon, St Swithin Street, Winchester.
And this letter is called Impenetrable, and you will see why. According to your news item in Chronicle, October the 10th, Chairman of the Hampshire Police and Crime Panel Councillor David Stewart has criticised Police and Crime Commissioner Michael Lane. Apparently, he thinks the PCC should communicate more. Nobody would disagree with this. But it is rather a case of the pot calling the kettle black. Councillor Stewart's own panel is itself hardly noted for its transparency or openness to the public. If anything, it has a record of defensiveness against the public, who are not necessarily welcome at its meetings, which, unlike those of the PCC, are not well advertised. From what it is possible to make out from the turgid, bureaucratic gobbledygook of Councillor Stewart and PCC Lane that you record, it appears that Mr. Lane recently presented a report to the PCP at one of these meetings. He was doing so in reply to criticisms of his stewardship of Hampshire Constabulary and its chief constable, whom he is supposed to oversee. The report's gist seems to have been that, in some way, the inadequacies in frontline policing experienced by the ordinary Hampshire public are being compensated through some sort of vague behind-the-scenes activity by the PCC. This has come about in some unspecified way from his partnerships with associated community groups. His report is the outcome of an in-depth engagement exercise with these bodies in order to understand their views on the impact of his work. It is impossible to measure crime that has not happened. It is thus hard to see how, endorsing the PCC's Pollyanna noises, Councillor Stewart can know that there has been a positive impact on preventing crime. What, incidentally, of crime that has not been reported because the victims lack confidence in the police to act? Reduced demand on frontline policing can have more than one cause. Perhaps the PCC does not really have anything to communicate. In the real world, outside Messrs. Stewart's and Lane's bubble, crime grows and the police shrink. Councillor Stewart's own impenetrable jargon leaves us as much in the dark as the PCC's non-communication. This from Theresa Skelton, Justice and Anti-Corruption Party in Winchester.
This is headed Failed to Act. I think it important for members of Parliament, above all, to remember that casework on behalf of constituents is the most important part of their role. I wrote to Mr. Brown regarding my right to remain in the UK under the Settled Status Scheme prior to the first subsequently annulled prorogation. The government introduced 99 pages of statutory instruments, which included changes to the Settled Status Scheme. These new changes grant the government the ability to revoke the settled status of any EU citizen in the UK with no set of legal guidelines or reasons for doing so. Having been granted settled status only on appeal, I wrote to my MP regarding my concerns about these changes and asked for assistance with clarification from the Home Office. Mr. Brown took on my case, but despite following up, I've been provided no answers. My second follow-up, in which I asked for updates in order to make plans for my future, was ignored entirely. Short of a general election in which EU citizens are unable to vote, I'm at a loss as to what to do when I, like many EU citizens in Winchester, are ignored by our parliamentarians. Having heard our MP's concern for EU citizens, which unfortunately contradict his actions in my experience, may I offer a reminder that MPs are elected to represent all their constituents, and failure to act on current casework has a real impact on the lives of those seeking help. I'm trying to make a decision as to whether I will still be welcome in this country, and unfortunately, I have received no reassurance from our MP. I continue to await his response. Avital Dank, Staple Gardens, Winchester.
And still in the same general area, ill-informed, says Peter Rees. Sir, Steve Brine's latest ill-informed attack on the Labour Party, alleging that the party has made a policy decision to abolish public schools, was wrong, as usual. Apart from the historic misnomer that public schools are exclusive private schools for the rich, the only other madness around at the moment is the divided and divisive Tory party, hell-bent on leading us towards a deadly Brexit. This is Angela Rayner's statement, Labour's Shadow Minister for Education, proposing party policy. We'll upgrade social mobility to social justice, turning the Social Mobility Commission into the Social Justice Commission. We'll set that commission to work on making the whole education system fairer through the integration of private schools. The first budget of the next Labour government will immediately close the tax loopholes used by elite private schools and use that money to improve the lives of all children. John McDonnell will remake our economy for social justice by taxing privilege, redistributing wealth, and reinvesting in public services. Steve Brown hysterically misinterprets this fundamental policy statement. He is clearly afraid that the vast, sustained underfunding of the state education is going to be revealed with Labour in power. He wants to support the Tory policy of denying equality of education opportunity to the officially designated 4 million UK children in poverty. He is significantly afraid of how the massive revelations of how much state funding is actually injected into private education through tax loopholes and the excessively generous charitable status advantages. He clearly does not want an investigation into the billions of pounds of private educational land, estate, property and investments of it, and exclusive facilities reserved solely for the rich. Words of advice for Steve. Get your facts right before making false allegations. Stop rubbishing state comprehensive education and start promoting equality of educational opportunity for all, not just the rich. Peter Rees, Winchester Labour Party.
And now a change, still an important area though. This one entitled M3 BAFE. I find it difficult to believe that Councillor Lumbey, in Chronicle Letters October 3, has chosen to take such an eccentric position on the recent discussion on climate emergency and how widening the M3 will raise the road transport emissions in Winchester District to unacceptable levels. He dismisses the carefully constructed arguments by green groups by calling them siren calls, but he fails to argue his case. He is determined to overlook 1. The cross-party consensus in Winchester City Council in June, when many of his Conservative colleagues argued passionately in favour of a declaration of climate emergency, some of them suggesting that the proposals did not go far enough or quickly enough. 2. The sheer scale of CO2 emissions in the district and the need to reduce the road transport emissions that produce 58% of them. 3. The certainty that doubling the road surface area at Junction 9 and adding 50% more road surface along the not-so-smart motorway will make transport emissions even worse. 4. The constructive suggestions from Winchester Green Groups for reducing M3 congestion without road widening through better bus and rail services, etc. 5. The certainty that congestion will return once the new capacity has been filled. And finally, the concern expressed in your editorial about further road programmes. Instead, he seems unashamedly to be offering bait for his voters. Let's hope they will see through this ploy. I doubt whether many people will opt for jam today when they know the price will be extinction tomorrow. I believe most people will value the need to reduce transport emissions permanently above any desire to get home 10 minutes earlier at night just for a few years. Let's hope Highways England reverse their priorities for the M3 and find better things to spend £160 million on. This from Phil Gagg, St Swithin Street.
Same old. Brexiteers making sweeping statements, which, like so much of the pro-Brexit argument, are devoid of factual detail, along with the deafening noise about calls for another referendum as being undemocratic. For their benefit, here are some facts, in detail, relating to our democracy. The 216 referendum was not, as Brexiteers would have us believe, the greatest democratic event in our country's recent history. The turnout was 72.21%, which is 5.49% less than the turnout in the 1992 general election, 77.7%. Under the first-past-the-post system, the number of seats a party holds in Parliament does not accurately reflect the proportion of the popular vote it receives. Look at Northern Ireland, where the DUP won 36% of the popular vote in the last general election, which translated into 8 seats, while Sinn Féin won 29.4% of the popular vote, but only half as many seats. In 2017, Theresa May went to the country to get a stronger mandate to take us out of the European Union. The result of that democratic exercise was the Conservatives lost the slim majority they had had. May then bought the support of the DUP. Democratic? Moreover, the DUP is propping up a pro-Brexit government as representatives for a province which voted to stay in the EU by 55.78% to 44.22%. Boris Johnson, as leader of the Conservatives, is de facto Prime Minister. He was elected to this position by 0.13% of the population. He was virtually invisible during the leadership campaign, with no opportunities for scrutinising his policies, or perhaps, should I say, those of his close adviser, Dominic Cummings. And when did this Mr. Cummings, who apparently wields so much power, stand for election? Don't lecture those calling for a second on democracy. Alison Biden, Northbrook Close, St. Giles Hill, Winchester.
This letter comes from Paul Openshaw and is called Two Answers. Two letters, Chronicle October 10, refer back to my letter of 2 weeks earlier. To Peter Hargreaves, I would say that when I said of a different political persuasion, I was referring, as he knows, to my position on Brexit. That has nothing to do with conventional party politics. There are many of his Conservative colleagues who share my position on Brexit. For the record, I'm a member of the Green Party. In the same way as the Prime Minister's use of words such as letterbox and surrender are designed to appeal to certain sections of society, so were Mr. Hargreaves. To James Anderson, I would say, if the cap fits, wear it. I made no mention of a red bus. There were many lies told by the Leave campaigns, both before and after the referendum. Mention was made, for instance, of 73 million Turks, one of the easiest trade deals in history, and they needing us more than we needed them. Anyone requiring further evidence should look at the Led by Donkeys Brexit billboard campaign. Paul Openshaw, White Hart Road, Fair Oak.
And another change of subject, this entitled Railway Plans. Thank you for publishing my letter, Re Mitchell Dever Car Parking, in the Chronicle of October 17th. In your edition of October the 10th, I note that Network Rail is looking to develop a solar power installation at Mitchell Dever on spare railway land, presumably on the sidings I mentioned. Would it not be possible for South West Trains to build said car park on this land, with Network Rail building their installation on the roof? Your October 17th edition carries a report on the approval for the development of Wellbourne Garden Village near Wickham. Many months ago, a similar report stated that in addition to the schools, etc., a new railway station near the closed Knowle Halt would be included. There is no mention of this in this latest report, only of road improvements. So much for environmental considerations. This from LJ White, Smells Away Eastleigh.
Meadowside. I was alarmed to read in your publication on October the 10th that the Lib Dem administration at Winchester City Council are considering the closure of the Meadowside Leisure Centre in Whiteley. It is clear from the administration's early actions that its focus is on Winchester City itself, and it has little interest in the 200 square miles of the district outside it. Whiteley is a strong, vibrant and growing community, and the leisure centre is a vital facility at its heart. It must not be lost, but instead ways found to make it better, especially as the first new homes at North Whiteley become closer to first occupation. Please do let your local councillors know that this district is about more than the city of Winchester, and that community assets elsewhere in the area must be protected and improved. That is from Hugh Lumby, Upper Meon Valley Ward, Winchester City Council, High Street, Meonstoke. And the letter editor's note, the closure of the centre is one of several options that are being considered.
hidden gem. Having been intrigued by recent letters to you and an article in your paper about the Hampshire Record Office, and especially its garden, I decided to take a look for myself. I'm embarrassed that, despite having lived in Wichita for many years, I was completely unaware of the garden that Sir Colin Stansfield Smith so thoughtfully incorporated into the design of the building. Upon reaching it, I discovered another of Winchester's hidden gems, albeit one in need of further TLC, as it seems to have been neglected for some considerable time. Readers of your paper will be well aware of the controversy that has arisen about the design for station approach development, and although I don't want to dig into those issues, I do want to make a plea on behalf of the Stansfield Smith Garden. The third of the Council's three strategic objectives for the development listed in last week's article states that it should improve the aesthetic and environmental impact of the area. Preserving the garden fits very well with this objective. It needs to be preserved in a way that ensures it provides an obvious and openly accessible pathway to the city rather than remaining a hidden gem. This will contribute to meeting the Council's stated objective and serve as a fitting memorial to someone who did so much to enhance the design of local authority buildings throughout Hampshire. Sir Colin created buildings that would delight those who saw them and used them, and which they were functional in imaginative ways. If this spirit influences the final design of the station approach, it'll go a long way towards the Council also achieving its first strategic objective, namely to maintain and improve the City Council's assets. Peter Wilcock, Ranelagh Road, Winchester.
And this heartening story from Mrs. Mary Andrews, entitled Faith Restored. I had a nasty fall over uneven paving stones in Jury Street outside of the overdraft on Friday, October the 18th. I am 73 and was on my own as my husband was parking the car and we were to meet outside Smith's. A lovely lady called Jenny, who worked at the castle, took control to see how I was. I couldn't move. A young man came out of overdraft and was a trained first aider. He did a few checks and another young man who worked in IT at Hampshire County Council rang for an ambulance. Most people stopped to ask if any more help was needed. People were amazing. An off-duty GP went to find blankets as it was really cold and threatening rain. The two young men managed to find a bundle of coats to try and keep me warm. A gentleman rang the ambulance again, as we had been told it would be 2 hours plus before one was available. A smartly dressed young man came along and said he was an off-duty paramedic and joined in to help. An off-duty policeman offered help if it was needed. Jenny was still there holding my hand. A young man had gone down to Smith's and found my husband. The paramedic took over the call, explained the situation, and was told the ambulance was on its way. The Winchester ambulance crew then took over and I was soon on my way to hospital. I had been on the pavement for 1.5 hours. The off-duty paramedic was in Winchester for his sister's graduation and they were on their way to lunch at Loch Fyne. He was from Newbury. To each and every person, I want to say a huge thank you, especially Jenny, as she was on her lunch hour, but she stayed to the end and rang the next day to see how I was. I hadn't broken anything, but have severely pulled a muscle in my upper leg. Thank you all. You have restored my faith in humankind.
This is a strange meeting. Last week's letter from Mr. Hoggett concerning the late Radio Caroline DJ and Winchester resident Simon D brought back happy memories. As a courier, I was delivering an odd package, a German World War II helmet and Soviet propaganda poster to be collected midway at a Winchester pub. Combining business with pleasure, I met a friend there who introduced his friend Nicholas. The client was late as his car had broken down. Nicholas recalled at length that in the 1960s he had owned many expensive but very unreliable British sports cars. When the client eventually turned up in a Lotus, Nicholas whispered, "Lotus stands for lots of trouble, usually serious." Only after his departure did my friend tell me that I had just met Nicholas Henty Dodd, whose stage name was Simon D. To make the day even more strange, I recall in the corner of the pub was a stuffed donkey. Michael John Tate, Bromley, Kent.
First cinema. The recent closure of Jack Will's store in the High Street reminded me that this property was the first purpose-built cinema in Winchester, opening in 1914 as The Picture House. It closed 20 years later and was converted into shop premises in the 40s. I remember my parents taking me to this cinema in the early 30s to see the Tarzan and Hopalong Cassidy films. Happy memories. Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
Dust cart incident, 6 months on. I am very sorry to hear of the bin lorry damage to the house in Stanmore the week before last. We do hope in Beggars Lane, Winnall, that you get it soon repaired. Here we are still awaiting restoration to a wall damaged by a bin lorry reversing into it 6 months ago. Keith Bennett, Beggars Lane, Winnall, Winchester.
Well, I think that wraps it up for the letters this week. Now it's your say. Now, some men seem to have been asked about fireworks in your say this week. What did they have to say, Peter?
They had to say, well, I'll just give you the title. It's Sainsbury's has become the first major supermarket to stop selling fireworks across the UK. And we have a few comments. From Ian Hamer, 65, retired of St Cross Road, Winchester, said, "Doesn't really bother me these days. I used to love watching them when I was younger, though." David Elvin, 60, salesman of Norwich Road, Southampton, said, "I don't have a problem with Sainsbury's not selling them because there are plenty of other places to buy fireworks." John Mead, 34, project manager of Winchester, said, "I like watching them, but it's best to leave them to the big public shows. Private displays only cause problems." And finally, Aaron Little, 22, self-employed of Winchester, said, "It seems like a general trend these days to hate private firework displays, but it doesn't bother me either way."
And now Q&A. Claire?
This is about Paul Bowler, 48, founder of Winchester Distillery of Central Winchester, and he tells us what he thinks of the city. "What is your favourite restaurant or cafe? We are spoilt for choice in Winchester when it comes to great places to eat. You can always find a delicious breakfast at Fort Tea Rooms. I love Mano Thai for their friendly service, and for a special occasion, Chesil Rectory. What is your favourite pub or bar? If I'm after a classic pub with decent drinks and a relaxed vibe, the Mucky Duck is a good option. I also like the atmosphere, food and drinks at the Green Man on Southgate Street. George, the bar manager at the Ivy Brasserie, makes some superb cocktails. What is your favourite shop? When I'm not making spirits, I really enjoy learning about wine, so I have to say Toscanaccio on Parchment Street. Cat always has a warm welcome and stocks an admirable range of wines from around the world, with a special focus on all things Italian. What is your favourite building? For its depth of history and stunning architecture, it has to be Winchester Cathedral. What is your favourite view? The view of our city from St Giles Hill is one to be enjoyed by tourists and locals alike. It takes in the High Street, Cathedral and St Cross. Who or what is Winchester's biggest icon? King Alfred, with his commanding presence on the Broadway. What's the best thing about Winchester? The community. The people I've met in and around Winchester are so welcoming and supportive. Without them, our business wouldn't have come so far. And the worst? The traffic around the one-way system. Describe Winchester in a sentence. Culture, history, incredible food and drink. The little city of Winchester has something for everyone.
Thank you, Claire. Now, if you have an opinion or a subject you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or you can email news@hampshirechronicle, that's all one word, .co.uk. Or you could also write to the editor at Upper 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Or you could just drop in when you're in Winchester. Now, Chronicle comment. The editor heads up his article this week with "An End to Free Parking in City." Nobody likes losing something that they have enjoyed for decades. Winchester City Council is currently considering scrapping free evening and Sunday parking in the city centre. Winchester has become one of the last authorities to offer such a perk to motorists and traders. Business leaders have said it will discourage people from visiting, hitting shops in the hard-pressed city centre. Perhaps, but perhaps, we should all be looking at the wider picture. The climate emergency means that we must all be weaned from reliance on the motor car, although increased support for public transport should be a must. Such a dispute over cars is nothing new. Back in the 1990s, when the City Council started talking about the primacy of pedestrians, there was widespread grumbling. Ditto when College Street, Kingsgate Street, was closed as a rat run. Park and Ride was also at first considered a threat to trade, removing parking from the city centre. But Winchester City Centre survived all these threats, and it will adjust to the end of free parking on Sunday and in the evenings. Now, George Hayter writes about two colours I try to avoid. Richard, tell us more.
Well, he says, when I bought a second-hand Mercedes in Winchester years ago, I had no idea I would lose so much. There's nothing wrong with the engine or the bodywork, and I had no complaint about the performance. The thing that brought problems was its colour. I had no idea that a car's colour could cause frustration and lead to hours of wasted time. I'm not talking about the outside. That was a satisfactory metallic silver. I'm talking about the inside, the cabin interior, which was black. Black, the colour of infinite darkness. Black, the colour of unfathomable mystery. It's not a superstition thing. I'm talking about a down-to-earth practical consequence of having a car with a black interior. It makes you lose things that are themselves black. Anything black that you own, in my case my wallet, my phone, my gloves, even my spare trousers, will vanish in the chasm of black. Blackness has hidden everyday black objects from my wife too. Her black shoes, black work folder, black hairbrush and her sunglasses all were given up for lost, till they turned up later in our black hole on wheels. For anyone striving for a trouble-free life, this is sabotage by camouflage. Black seats, black carpet and black storage compartments do eventually reveal their black prey, but usually only after a time-consuming tactile fingertip search. Black objects are camouflaged most frustratingly on that blackest of black terrain, black carpet under black front seats. Drivers who are lucky enough to have a car interior which is not black will usually have a pretty good idea what's on the back seat just by glancing over their shoulder. But anything black in a black car interior will defy anything short of a full visual audit. Black's swallowing act was regularly performed by our boot, too. The odd raincoat or dark jacket, coupled with a piece of charcoal, grey boating equipment or some other shadowy paraphernalia, is enough to render a black boot permanently uncharted territory. It's not just car interiors. Beware black for any interior. Backpacks, for example. Rummaging through one of those indeterminate black floppy things in search of urgently required dark matter, such as phone, passport or spectacles case, will inevitably end up in you emptying the whole thing out. So now I'm testing a new policy. Any possession which I regularly place in or on something black cannot itself be black. Same goes for my... Since I swapped my black wallet for a red one, I've never mislaid it. Same goes for my formerly black diary, now replaced by a brown one. And my wife has helpfully slipped my black phone into a beacon-like pink cover. Household consumer electronics often have a dozen or more sockets at the back. Input 1, audio out, etc. are often labelled with letters and numbers moulded into the plastic case. When I had a white computer, the labels were legible because the shadows of the characters could be seen. Now that I have a black computer, the shadows are invisible, unless I fetch a torch and a magnifying glass. Black's not the only villain. Be wary of white. A white floor in our bathroom seemed a heavenly bright idea, but in practice it showed up the unseemly hair that all of us shed. Not all of it from our heads. I've never got on with white shirts because I'm fond of gravy and picking blackberries. White trousers are hopeless if you like sitting on grass, and a white suit is for the foolhardy. I admit that white is perfect for ceilings and people who enjoy cleaning their car, while black makes for good attire when sweeping a chimney. Neither black nor white are colours, scientifically speaking. Black is just the absence of any light. White is the sensation you get when all nature's colours arrive at the retina in equal strength.
Thank you, Richard. Very enlightening. Now, to bring us back down to earth, letter from Westminster. I think the Winchester and Chandler's Ford MP, Steve Bryan, has a few words for us. What are they, Peter?
He has indeed, Barbara. This is Steve Bryan's letter from Winchester. Shall I start again?
Okay.
Letter from Westminster. The Hampshire Chronicle has carried its share of good news for Winchester and the surrounding area during its long history. But we've had a double helping this month that is to be celebrated and is worthy of note. First, you may have noticed some exciting news about major new investment we have secured for the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. The Trust will be able to access seed funding right away to develop plans for a £500 million major rebuild, which will secure long-term safe and sustainable services in our much-loved and relied-upon District General Hospital. In recent years, I've successfully lobbied for small amounts of funding to improve the emergency department or relocate the hospital pharmacy team. They are all really important to the patient experience, but this is on a totally different scale. It's a huge vote of confidence from the government and the NHS. This does not mean there are not choices to be made and other battles to fight. The success of the local NHS cannot be only about tertiary care. I want to see the prevention green paper I wrote before leaving office as a health minister turned into reality. And as the public finances recover, ministers must address the overall public health spend and its effectiveness. Equally, it was very good to hear adult social care form part of last week's Queen's speech. We may have had a torrid time trying to address the issue in 2017, but it's time to return to the scene of the crime and face the reality that confronts many of you every day. Without a parliamentary majority or an opposition remotely interested in a cross-party solution, it's going to be fiendishly difficult. But to govern is to choose. I am regularly in the hospital, meeting clinicians and senior management, and I look forward to working closely with the Trust and government as we develop plans to transform the hospital for the benefit of my constituencies. More of this at stevebryne.com/priority NHS, again all one. Secondly, when I led a big Schools in Winchester debate in Parliament this summer, I could only hope we'd get such a positive response from ministers. That plea for a long-term funded plan for schools came on top of years of campaigning, including through the F40 group, of which I am a member, and is a big win for this area. There is always more to do, but this 2.45 million cash boost will be very welcome in my constituency. School budgets may have been largely protected from austerity, and per pupil funding may have risen, but changes to the lump sum and significant cost pressures have really tested our hard-working head teachers and governors. On top of that, we have a serious issue with high needs funding in Hampshire, with many local schools seeing a marked increase in the needs of children, especially with regards to social, emotional and mental health. I think parents and teachers will recognise this positive response to the very real concerns I raised on their behalf in Parliament. This is what experience and credibility delivers for our area.
Thank you. Now we have three little pieces from Belgarum this week. Claire, would you start us off?
This section is headed Early Sprouting. Well, at least it was October. These Christmas trees have been sprouting across the city centre, including the Casson block on St George's Street and McDonald's across the road from the second week of October. The strings of light are being set up throughout the city centre in time for the festive lights switch on Thursday, November the 14th. But has anyone considered leaving them up all year to save people the hassle of putting them up?
I have a rather charming picture here of a lonely pigeon walking down the nave of the cathedral. This pigeon put in an appearance at the graduation ceremony for Winchester University in the cathedral last week. Photographer Dominic Parks captured it strolling up the nave, perhaps to collect a degree in ornithology or avian studies.
And this one is called On the Trail of the Sarsons. There are two pictures of two stones, but it gives you no idea of scale. But I think they're quite big ones, judging by this. Belgarum's Twyford correspondent has been out and about on the trail of the huge Sarson stone featured in a recent chronicle, a stone photographed around 100 years ago in Shawford. There is no longer any sign of it, but the question remains, how could such an enormously heavy object have been stolen or even moved? Other Sarson stones in Twyford include one in a garden in Finch's Lane, and the other on the path that leads from St Mary's Church to the River Itchen. Are there any more around?
A mystery indeed. And now on to some historical items with the usual snippets from 200, 100, 50 and 25 years ago. Well, we'll start off 200 years ago on Monday, October the 25th, 1819. There's two little pieces here. The seventh public distribution of Bibles and Testaments by the Southampton Ladies Bible Association took place at the Long Rooms on Monday evening last in the presence of a crowded audience. And a ball of fire of an extraordinary magnitude fell on the estate of Colonel Sheddon, the Elmer, near Southampton, on Wednesday night. In its descent, the town and neighbourhood, to a considerable extent, were plainly seen by the crew of the Custom House boat lying in the river.
100 years ago, Saturday, October the 25th, 1919, a new epoch in the history of the government of the city, and one which was appropriately included in the history-making period of the mayoralty of Alderman A. Edmeads, DL.JP, was that on Thursday evening, when the special constables of the city, who were recently demobbed, paraded at the Guildhall to receive at the hands of His Worship a certificate of their service during the period of the war. To its great success as an educational establishment, Peter Simmons School, Winchester, is adding an outstanding reputation for the training of its cadet corps, having twice in 3 years won the Lucas Tooth Fund.
I have two items from 50 years ago, Saturday, October the 25th, 1969. Lone Barn stood in the village of Easton near Winchester for 400 years. It has not, as some might suppose, been demolished. It's been dismantled, taken away piece by piece, and re-erected exactly how it was, 14 miles away at the back of the Fox and Hounds at Hungerford Bottom near Bursledon on the Hamble River. Licensee Don Taylor, a publican with a love of the nostalgic. He has a deep interest in rural history, but he's a businessman too. He knows that rural history is not only interesting, it pays, handled in the right way. He's been responsible for genuine restoration of a number of inns in his area. The 400-year-old Ship at Swanwick, the Eachley Ancient White Hart at Hamble, and the 300-year-old Jolly Sailor at Bursledon. And secondly, applications by 47 residents of flats in Warwick, Twyford and Farringdon Courts, Northlands Drive, Winchester, for rating reductions have been turned down by the Hampshire Valuation Panel. Representing all but two of the residents, Mr. Maurice Beale said that the flats were on a site 3/4 of a mile from the city centre, off Worthy Road, and were part of a large development of flats and houses being undertaken by Page Johnson Limited. They were subject to certain restrictions concerning the displaying of washing lines, the playing of radio and television sets, and so on. As such, they were not suitable for 6 people with children, an extremely limiting factor as regards sales and letting. The flats have been assessed at about 7 shillings per square foot, Mr. Beale went on, and he drew comparisons not only with other flats, but also with small terraced and semi-detached houses offering similar amenities.
And 25 years ago, on Friday, October the 21st, 1994, 3 companies will soon submit plans for the disposal of Hampshire's waste over an expected 20-year period. It will be the biggest contract Hampshire County Council has ever let. The companies now in the running, from an initial field of 23, are Northumberland Environmental Management, the German company ABT, and Hampshire Waste Services. Options will revolve around incineration, landfill, recycling, and anaerobic digestion, where waste is treated biologically. Asked if he preferred an approach that would be inclusive, involving a number of all of these, Bob Lisney, Hampshire's Waste Projects Manager, replied that his preference was for the simplest solution that had the best cost and environmental gain. He described the household waste problem of Hampshire as enormous. Putting together a strategy to deal with it would also be very complex. And it won't simply be a matter of opening the envelopes on November the 21st and seeing who has come up with the lowest estimate. The contracts for North, South East and South West Hampshire could be one of the 3 companies, or all 3 could share them. Mr. Lisney said the tender company would be chosen in March. Issues to be considered will include incineration against non-incineration options, plus associated health issues. And the second item, a widower who used to plead for credit at his local shop has shocked neighbours by leaving a £4.5 million fortune in his will. Shabbily dressed Stan Smith, 89, never carried cash, never had a holiday, and even pretended that he couldn't read or write. But in reality, he was a millionaire garage boss with substantial property interests and a winning racehorse. He lived alone in a modest house in Bramshaw in the New Forest. The manager of the village stores, Derek Roberts, said Stan would regularly plead poverty when he called at his shop for milk and cigarettes. He said he would come into the shop and ask for something and then tell me he had come out with no money. He used to show me the lining of his pockets and I would agree to let him pay up later. Another villager added, I can't believe old Stan was so loaded. He was the sort of chap who would borrow a fiver and then accidentally forget to give it back. If he met me in the village, he would even ask me for a cigarette because he said he was broke until his pension arrived.
Thank you all. Now I'll have a quick look at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. There's meetings on Wednesday, October the 30th in the Gospel in the United Church, Jewry Street, which is up at 12:30, and it's called In Chains for the Gospel. There's a meeting on Wednesday, the 6th of November at Shawford Parish Hall, and that's Birds of Sea and Shore, and that's at 7:45 p.m. There's another wildlife talk on Wednesday, November the 13th, Wildlife in an Otterbourne Backyard and Beyond. That's at Badger Farm Community Centre at 7:30. On Wednesday, the 13th of November, Exploring the North Island of New Zealand. There's a talk at the Winchester Club in Worthy Road. That's at 7:30 p.m. and visitors are welcome there for a ticket price of £4. There's a few concerts lunchtime at Romsey Abbey, Licorice Clarinet Concerto, Clarinet Quartet, playing music from Handel to Ellington and Gershwin to Debussy. That's on Tuesday, October the 29th at 1 p.m. And exactly the same time, Tuesday, October the 29th at 1 p.m, there's a lunchtime recital in Winchester Cathedral. That's Michael Christian Durrant and Samuel Moore playing classical guitar. Both of these concerts are free with a retiring collection at the end. There's another autumn concert in Romsey Abbey on Saturday, November the 2nd at 7 p.m. And that's the choirs of Romsey Abbey. And a Welsh choir is playing on Saturday, November the 2nd at the Hospital of St Cross, and that's at 7 p.m. with tickets £12 to include a pre-concert drink. If you happen to be anywhere near the theatre in Winchester, there is some new art in the theatre bar. There is a sculpture called Play to the Crowd, which has been unveiled. The Play to the Crowd is the charity that has unveiled the statue called Trilogy. It's been created by Winchester-based artist and sculptor Nadine Collinson, and it is the playful and elegant piece that tells the story of three abstract characters, each on their own personal artistic journey, but also connected. I think that's probably free to get into in the theatre bar. The City Museum is opening its doors to the Treasury Museum free of charge, if you want to visit that. And finally, Lisa Pullman sings Streisand at the Theatre Royal in Winchester. There's no details of the date. Oh, November the 3rd. Tickets are available from the Theatre Royal box office. And here are the lighting up times. Starting on Saturday the 26th of October, the sun will set at 5:51 p.m. And on Wednesday the 30th of October, the sun will rise at 6:53 a.m. and will set at 4:44 p.m. And now it's on to items of general news. Claire, would you like to kick us off, please, with the first one?
Bus drivers tackle the challenge of Snowdon. Five Winchester bus drivers successfully climbed the highest mountain in Wales to raise £1,600 for a Hampshire hospice in tribute to one of their colleagues. The staff of Stagecoach South tackled Mount Snowdon in aid of Countess Mountbatten. Gareth Corpse, Trevor Kimber, Christ Guttridge, Santa Thapa and Hayden Hebb all work out of the Winchester depot. They took part in this climb in memory of their former driver, Brian Bell, who passed away recently after being cared for by the Southampton Hospice. Mr. Corpse said, "We're very proud of our achievement and so glad we can show our support for our much-respected colleague Brian in this way. Countess Mountbatten Hospice is a great cause and the money we've raised from this climb will really make a difference to the people and families they help at a time when they really need support." The drivers were aided in their challenge by volunteer Ken Vance, a brother of the Jesuit order, who gave them free accommodation before their climb. Mount Snowdon is the highest mountain in Wales, standing at an elevation of 1,085 metres above sea level. Edward Hodgson, managing director of Stagecoach South, said, "I've got great admiration for the way our drivers have committed to honouring their colleague and committing to a physical challenge that's a long way from their day-to-day role behind the wheel for us."
Historical paintings of the city. A Winchester author has produced a calendar of the work of a little-remembered 19th century artist. Bill Hode has produced the calendar for 2020, featuring the watercolours of George Shepherd, 1784 to 1862, of the city in the era before the railways. The paintings, including views of the High Street, the Square and Jury Street, are in the archives of Winchester College. Mr. Hode said, "These watercolours have never been exhibited because they are inserted between text pages of books, which has kept them in pristine condition. Having come across them and realised how magically they captured the city early in the 19th century, I felt they deserved to be exposed to a wider audience. The college very kindly allowed me to use the images in the calendar and in a book that I'm writing, which will contain Shepherd's life and his work in Hampshire. It was important to me that the calendar should be printed and published in Winchester. Printed by Tony Hill at Sarson Press in Hyde Street, it's available from him and, amongst others, P&G Wells Bookshop and Warren and Son the Stationers."
You may have already seen this, but this is entitled "Airport Set to Submit Expansion Plan." Southampton Airport is set to submit plans to extend its runway in a matter of days. The airport proposes to extend the runway by 164 metres, and if approved by Eastleigh Borough Council, work will start in early 2020 for completion by the end of the year. When contacted, the airport would not give a specific date for the submission, but confirmed it would be within days and before the end of October. The airport claims the expansion will increase jobs on site from the current level of 950 to 1,500. Friends of the Earth, the Green Party and Extinction Rebellion have banded together to fight the plans. Calling themselves Airport Expansion Opposition, AXO, they accept the need for a small regional airport. However, because of the climate crisis, believes people must fly less. It is urging residents to sign a petition calling on the council to reject the plans. The airport will be hosting drop-in sessions for the public to learn about the plans. They will be on Thursday, October the 24th, from 6:30 to 8:30 at Bitton Park School. Saturday, October the 26th, from 10 till 12 at Southampton Airport, and Tuesday, October the 29th, from 6:30 to 8:30 at Shawford Village Hall. Winchester MP Steve Brine visited the airport on Wednesday, October the 9th, to understand their plans on behalf of his constituents, particularly those living to the south of Winchester. He pressed home that while he recognised that Eastleigh Borough Council is the planning authority, any plans must fully involve Winchester City Council and its elected members. Mr. Brine said, "At present, Southampton Airport is watching potential customers drive past its front door on their way to London, only to fly back overhead. This is not about creating more demand. It's about giving people locally some choice and developing the regional economy at the same time."
Craft activities. The Gurkha Museum in Winchester is opening its doors on Wednesday, October the 30th, to invite children and their parents to learn about superstitions of Nepal whilst taking part in fun craft activities. Between 11 a.m. and 3 p.m, pop into the museum gallery to try your hand at activities such as creating your own spiders, designing your own henna tattoos, and making your own cardboard cookery knife. With over 200 years of history, the Gurkha Museum in the Peninsula Barracks on Romsey Road honours and promotes the heritage and culture of Gurkha soldiers and their continuing service to the British Crown. Entry to the museum is £5 for adults, with a chance to become an annual member and free for children under 14 years. However, the activities in the museum on Wednesday, October the 30th, are free. The museum just asks for donations on the day.
Same-day emergency care unit unveiled. A new unit helping people attending the emergency department make sure they get the treatment they need sooner has opened at Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester. The same-day emergency care unit, which is located next to the newly developed emergency department at Winchester Hospital, allows patients to be seen and assessed by specialist clinicians sooner, reducing the likelihood of them requiring an overnight stay, As well as being identified as suitable in the emergency department, patients can also be directly admitted to the unit by their GP or the ambulance service. Patients suitable for treatment in the unit are mainly those who need to be assessed urgently but may not require a hospital stay. This includes patients showing symptoms of conditions such as appendicitis, blood clots, gallstones and pneumonia.
Pupils meet to banish plastic. Pupils from 20 different schools gathered for the first plastic-free schools conference. Both primary and secondary schools were at the event, organised by Plastic Free Winchester and the University. The 63 pupils shared ideas on how to reduce plastic consumption in everyday life. Carol Parks, Professor of Responsible Management at Winchester University's Business School, opened the conference by sharing her years of expertise in the field of sustainability. Attendees then all took part in a workshop, and King's School, the first in the district to have plastic-free schools status, spoke about how they achieved it. Hannah Williams, chairman of Plastic Free Winchester, said, "Coming on the heels of the global climate strike in September, the conference was a unique opportunity for students to work together and become part of something bigger for their future."
Acting royalty, Dame Judy honoured by City University. National Treasurer and acting star Judy Dench was recognised by Winchester University for her award-winning career. The Oscar and Golden Globe winner was presented with an honorary doctorate for her services to the dramatic arts by the university's Chancellor, Alan Titchmarsh, on the final day of this year's graduation ceremonies in the Cathedral. Famous for a star-studded filmography, including her portrayal of M for 20 years in the James Bond film series, and a variety of performances in Shakespeare's plays. The 84-year-old began her acting career in 1957 and continues to work in the industry. In 2016, she visited Winchester to take time out from her rehearsals to support a Hampshire charity. The event, held in aid of Home Start Winchester, saw her come to Winchester Guildhall for a conversation with friend and biographer John Miller. She previously performed at the Winchester Festival, notably to a packed crowd, for Great Eccentrics in 2008.
New shop has opened in Winchester. Armand's Turkish Handcrafted on Middle Brook Street is now selling household items and gifts. It offers unique products from lights and candle holders to ceramic crockery, hand crocheted accessories and clothing. Lisa Evans, office manager at the Brook, said, "We're delighted that this brings another unique and independent offering to the Brooks. We always thrive to support independent and chain stores at the centre, and we're continually expanding and welcoming new brands."
And finally, couple freed. Firefighters rescued a couple locked in their bathroom in Winchester. The lock broke on the door, trapping the couple inside at a property in the valley, Stanmore, late on Tuesday evening. A crew from Winchester station took around 30 minutes using a special piece of kit to secure entry without damaging the door.
Dear, what can the matter be?
And I'm sorry to say that that's all we have for you this week. But before we go, another reminder that Mary Davis is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. And her number, again, is 01962 711 998. And thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition. To our editors, Gordon and Liz. And of course, many thanks to our readers, Claire.
Goodbye.
Richard.
Goodbye.
And Peter.
Goodbye.
And from me, Barbara, until the next time, goodbye. Now, just a reminder, please remember to put the memory stick in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible. And, of course, another reminder that the clocks go back this Saturday night on Sunday morning.